are not experts. We've just been asked to facilitate. What we want to do is give you the context of our lives quickly and how we are caring for our parents. We want you to meet our parents. We want to talk about the Bible's mandates, the guiding principles that we've been working through. Not always well, but they do help guide, and then just wrap up with some final thoughts. We're going to be around as long as you guys want to. If you got a bottle of wine hidden somewhere, let's get that out, you know, afterwards. But, you know, we're just here to commiserate, to understand, to be, you know, we're all in this together. So Cliff and I are both now retired. We did work full time. We were home church leaders and hosts until just this July. We are currently discipling only one person, but we are still seeking to exercise our gifts and our spiritual passions. I know you have read the emails about Mr. Homeless Guy, right? He goes out to a homeless shelter on the west side and has learned how to walk people through the gospel quickly. I am now volunteering up to 7 hours and hopefully more a week as a Billy Graham Evangelical Association online chatter. And I would be happy to talk about that afterwards. If you're looking for a ministry, you want to disciple someone online, or you want to talk to non-Christians about the Lord online, but I digress. We each only have one adult child in Columbus, we are the only adult child in Columbus, and we each have one parent living in Columbus. So I've got my mom, Cliff has his dad. We tend to take point for our individual parent, but we will also work together as a team as well. I handle my father-in-law's finances, and Cliff will at a moment's notice, help my mom out.
All right. That's my dad, and I'm told there's a resemblance between us. I don't see it, but that last picture there, that's about a 15-year-old picture. This is Dad now. He's 96 years old, and he loves wearing loud hats. That's his Cavaliers championship hat. He's got a Reds hat now. So Dad is 96. He's in assisted living now. Yeah, you do that. And he physically is doing well, and mentally he's doing well. He walks, he used to be tower over me, now he's shorter than I am because he's hunched over and he walks really slow. And I'm the only family in Columbus, as Kathy said. And I will say this, Dad, although his faculties are good, he's grown very stubborn in his old age, particularly when it comes to change, and more about that later.
All right, this is my mom with her 5 great-grandkids, 4 of whom live in Columbus. Mom is 89, a widow of 4 years. We moved her from Apple Valley because she couldn't maintain stairs. She now lives in an apartment off of Hard and Sawmill Roads by herself, which she loves and hates at the same time. She wants the independence. I have learned that the apple does not fall too far from the tree. Here's my mom with a beer in one hand, wearing a cross, and learning how to work on her own 2005 Dodge Caravan.
We had just completed a car repair project together.
My mom's a choleric. She's a choleric's choleric. And again, fiercely independent, like probably most of our parents, and yet is growing more and more in need of help, but will not move into an assisted living, nor is she, you know, she's at that stage where she's not independent, but she really isn't in need of being in an assisted living home yet. So who is her assistant? That would be me. But she's delightful. She comes over every Sunday night for dinner, and we've got a little dinner club going with another friend, and it's been really wonderful. She drives. And she said, please don't take my car keys away, because right, it's her independence. And I said, I will not take your car keys away until your airbags deploy. She said, okay, that sounds reasonable. So, all right, so most of you know this, that God has mandates for us caring for our older parents, right? Timothy, Paul was instructing Timothy in the church of Ephesus that the men and women have responsibilities. If we have widows, we are to assist them and not put it on the church. Maybe that's financial, maybe that's practical, it doesn't matter. It falls on, you know, children. And God does not smile upon those who neglect their older parents. So we know this is a mandate from the Lord. We're glad it's a mandate from the Lord. We know that God smiles on us as we take care of our parents. And then Moses says, honor your father and mother, right? But, and this is, I think, important for Cliff and me, or me especially, growing up with some resentment towards my parents. If a man says to his father or mother, whatever I have that would help you is Corban, you no longer permit him to do anything for his father or mother. In other words, hey, I can't help you out because I got ministry. I'm going to translate it to what God had to get me to repent of, you know, because my parents were so difficult and my relationship with them was so difficult, I would often use ministry as an excuse for not investing in them when they needed the help early on, you know, 20 years ago. But, you know, let's not be legalists. God tells us to honor our mother and father. So I think we know all those principles, those mandates. But how does it work out in real life, right? That's why we're here.
Okay. So change is coming. We all know it's coming. I thought for years someday this is going to happen, and then next thing you know, it's happening. And you think you might be prepared for it, but you're not. So this would be time management where this is the different things that we generally spend time on in this church, I would say most of us. And, of course, those circles are not equal. The next one would be more what we're talking about. That big circle there, family, I think that's kind of where we're at with our parents. That's taking increasingly more time.
Right. These slides are thanks to Mary Barnum, but she was trying to help us understand that at different parts of our lives, spheres of influence, of involvement, of investment change. And so while, you know, we worked more hours in our career 20 years ago, now that has shrunken, in fact, gone away. And now family, my mom and his dad, are a greater sphere of our time and our energy. So there's no legalistic, there's no legalistic level of time that we put into any of these spheres. They're going to change and shift as our lives change and shift, right? And I think we know that, but I think as good Xenos workers, there's some guilt, there's some pressure, there's a lot of thoughts that go into how do we spend our time and still be a good Xenoid, still honor our parents, still whatever, right? But the point is that things are going to shift.
Okay, so that's the point of that slide. Here's an example for me. That's my mom. She's no longer living. About when she entered her 80s, she got dementia, and it got progressively worse over those 10 years. That picture there was taken when she was 4 days shy of 90. And it became apparent to me after a while that something had to give. I had to start getting to my parents' house more often and spend some more time, not just FaceTime with them, but to actually help with house cleaning. Kathy would prepare a home-cooked meal that I would take over, and it would be. Saturday was really important, and I had a guy I was discipling on Saturday morning, and I realized I could not meet with him at our usual time. In fact, I couldn't really meet with him Saturday morning at all, and so I asked him about changing our time, and for reasons I won't go into, he just said, I can't change my time, and unfortunately, from my perspective, we had to end that relationship because he wouldn't meet early in the mornings. So there was a sacrifice there. But in my mind, clearly, it was a sacrifice I needed to make. I had a principle I was standing on. And so it ended up being that I saw my parents, and I'm glad I did. But I lost that discipling relationship.
So we have asked people in our lives to be flexible with us as we are attempting to be flexible in our schedules and making our parents a priority. And so this gentleman, it's not that he couldn't get up early in the morning, he just didn't want to. And Cliff was trying to be very flexible and just said, Saturday now has to become a time with my parents. Will you work with me? And the guy just said no. So I remember it being, Cliff feeling guilty and Cliff feeling bad. Should I accommodate this younger, new disciple? And it became evident when Cliff said, I've got this priority with my parents, the gentleman didn't really want to be flexible. And so, we find those things out.
I want to mention here on this picture, too. So at this point, I'd been spending years of going over there every Saturday, having time with my parents, and it was really sweet time. I went over other days of the week sometimes too, but Saturday was the one consistent thing, and I got to see my mom become more and more childlike over the years, and in many ways it was really sweet. I remember if I wanted to see her dance around the living room with her arms up in the air, all I had to do was say two words. Hello, Dolly. And she'd start singing Hello, Dolly and doing twirling around the living room. This picture was actually taken about a day and a half before she died. And I went to pick her up at the memory care unit. If you don't know this now, not assisted living, not most of them can't take people with dementia because they wander. This one had a memory care unit was locked down. But I went to pick her up, and I said, you want to come to my house for lunch? And she goes, who are you? And I said, I'm Cliff, your son. And she turns to everybody in the common area and says, this is my son! And everybody goes, yay! And they start clapping. It was really a sweet moment. She was like a child, but I really loved her, and she really loved me. And you can look at her face there. She was not in good shape when she went in that place. She was only there a month. She fell, hit her head, and died.
My mom and dad also became a higher priority about 10 years ago when they lived in Apple Valley. It became increasingly obvious that they needed help cutting, mowing their lawn and doing some things around the house. My dad died of emphysema 4 years ago, but it was a progressive disease that started about 18 years ago. And so I had to think and pray about my job because I couldn't retire, but Saturdays and Sundays were really hard to get away. So by the grace of God at Columbus State, I could schedule my teaching on 4 days a week. And so classes became more like Tuesday, Thursday, or Monday, Wednesday. And so I began to make Friday a sacred day for my parents. And I would get up early and drive up to Apple Valley and spend the entire day with them and then come back. And I was doing a junior high cell group at the time on Friday nights. And I remember just having to come back and pray for energy because my parents had a difficult marriage. They were grasping for emotional straws. They were scared of what was happening to them. It was, Fridays were very, very difficult. But, you know, my boss would call meetings on Friday, and I had told him of my situation, and I said, you know, can we please do meetings some other time, or I'll come at 9 o'clock if I have to, but I'm really going to ask you to help me not be at Columbus State on Fridays. And for the most part, it worked out okay. It worked out okay. And I think that I won the respect of my boss because when he started to having to drive to his parents' house in Greenville, Ohio, we had some shared, you know, experiences, and I think he became, you know, got to understand. So, you know, I had been driving to Apple Valley for years, and figuring out now my investment, my mom is 2 to 3 days a week, and as the needs grow, then I have to keep deciding what's going to either leave my plate or get reduced on my plate. And it's, you know, these are really tough decisions. I'm seeing heads nod. I know you know this, right? It's really tough. My mom has been the victim of scamming. At one point, because she will not let me touch her finances, but she's the internet's greatest gift and greatest curse. She's an 89-year-old with a credit card and a computer who doesn't understand the internet. Ooh, this is flashing. I'll just click on this. And she's called me saying, you're going to be mad at me. I'm sitting at my bank's door with a $10,000 check because some guy with a foreign accent told me a very effective story, and he had already transferred he had gotten into her computer, taken $10,000, transferred three times. $10,000 has been transferred from her checking to her savings account, and they are so good. They hacked her credit cards because she clicked on things she shouldn't. And yet, you know, what I'm going to talk about in a little bit is the sanctification that comes. You cannot make people do what you want them to do. Mom, give me your credit card. No. You know, mom, let me teach you about internet safety. No, because I'm going to lose independence. But, you know, I have called my friends in cell group. I cannot come tonight. I'm on the way to my mom's house because they've hacked into her computer one more time. So again, these are the decisions we have to make all the time.
All right. So we got these judgment calls. We've alluded to some of them already, but parents want more and more of our time as time goes on. We'll feel this tension of competing interest, which I'm going to talk about here in a second. And we find ourselves asking God a lot for wisdom because we just don't really know what to do. And as I was once advised once, sometimes you never get a clear answer, and so you have to take a step of faith. So here's an example of that. Look at that look on my face. It's a lot of emotion there. We were going to go to a Clippers game. My dad, Kathy and her mom, and this is my daughter who is pursuing a transgender lifestyle. And so I had time to spend with my daughter and my dad. Well, as we were waiting for my daughter outside her apartment, my dad totters backwards and hits his head on a brick wall and starts bleeding all over the place. So I've got to jump in the car and look for urgent care, and we drive out to the far east side of town, and it's chaos is going on here, and I get him stabilized, and it's not bleeding, and he seems coherent, and everything seems fine, but he's clearly not going to the ball game. So I had the decision, do I stay or do I go to the ball game? And I was really struggling with that, and I finally decided, since he was stabilized and was sitting in his chair and turned the TV on, that I would go to the ball game but call him like every 15 or 20 minutes to make sure he's okay. So that's what I ended up doing, and that was one of those steps of faith. Because faith, honestly, I'm not sure if it was the right thing or the wrong thing, but I got there at the bottom of the fifth inning, and that's just after I had sat down, and you know, I'm trying to smile, but I'm stressed out. Here's another example of the pull, competing interest. My dad's been going to a group of old guys to a McDonald's every Wednesday morning for years. And the youngest one of the bunch is 80 years old. Well, my dad invited me to come, not just once, every week. And I thought, oh man, I do not want to get committed to an every week McDonald's with a bunch of old geezers. And but you know what? I went, and I understood why he liked this group so much. You know, these guys, they just swap stories, and they argue and they debate. And I thought, you know what? I'm going to do this. So I'm now the youngest member of this group by 25 years. But that was a case where I said yes. There have been many other cases where I've had to say no. But it's a case by case decision about whether you commit yourself to something or not, and is there some compromise or not. And I think at the end of the day, you want to feel at peace with whatever decision you make ultimately.
How many of you have parents who would take all your time if you would give it to them? And how many of you have parents who punish you if you don't? Yeah, because their relational needs, you know, it really isn't about the stuff in their house or the clothes that they have. It's about being with people. And if they're not ready to go to an assisted living where they might make some friends, even though, you know, everyone in those places are struggling themselves, they're going to... And they don't. And their friend, my mom, is like last woman standing. All of her friends are dying. She doesn't have the relational interactions. Even the physical touch she doesn't have. I realize that I'm trying to touch her more, because she doesn't even have the touch that she needs or that she was designed to have. And so, how many of us make these judgment calls? We feel bad. My mom just stands at the door of her apartment and watches me go. I just wish she'd close the door, you know, because it's like so sad. But she is suffering. I have to understand that there's a element of suffering that I cannot take away. I cannot fix her pain. We feel this tension. We feel like it's our responsibility to take care of their every need, and it's not our responsibility. There are some things we cannot fix, and we're going to have to sit in the pain with them and learn how to be good comforters in areas that we can't fix. And I think that that's painful for us as well. Like we can learn how to grieve. It's a time where we can learn how to grieve well with God, because we cannot fix most of the things that our parents are suffering from.
All right, here's another principle we try to follow. We invest in the spiritual lives of our parents, and we say prepare them for heaven. I have some specific examples about that, and I got to say, for me, this has been one of the sweetest things that has arisen out of me spending more time with my dad. Whoops. Okay, so I was never quite sure if my dad was actually saved. I asked him several times explicitly, and he said he was, but he just never talked about his spirituality, never, you know, evoked spiritual principles when we talked about things. But when we moved him into assisted living, I found this piece of paper, and in it, it has this. I don't know if you can read that, but he says, I have professed Jesus Christ as my Savior and Lord and believe. So I had written evidence that, in fact, he was saved. Now, I don't know how many of you have some doubts about whether or not your parents are saved. I know a lot of people just aren't sure. I wasn't sure, and then I had the privilege of finding this. So that was cool. Then, subsequent to that, I got the opportunity to start a Bible study at his assisted living facility every other week. And in this Bible study, it's small. There are a number of Bible studies out there. You know, they're always looking for people to come in and engage the residents. So I wasn't the only one. There were others. But I had a small, loyal band of people coming. And two women, one in her 80s and another in her 70s, have prayed to receive Christ. So there's been two salvations. But my dad and I, for the first time, have a spiritual relationship where we're actually talking about our spiritual lives and talking about issues. We've looked at passages on 1 Corinthians 15 about resurrected bodies. You know, I'm trying to cast a vision for these folks about what awaits them. And my dad, for his last birthday, I got him Randy Alcorn's book, Heaven. Now, this is interesting because years ago, my dad told me, heaven sounds like the most boring thing. He said, I can't imagine anything more boring than just praising God all day long. And I wasn't as knowledgeable about things as I am now, but even then I thought, there's something not right about that, because if everybody's praising God and they're in his presence, there's a reason for it, you know. But now he's read this book, and he has a clearer picture of what heaven is like. And I think it's really important for me to know that he understands what awaits him, because he's 96. He's going to be there soon enough.
My mom is definitely a believer in Christ and is very active in her church. But still, you know, to talk about spiritual things is awkward, isn't it? You know, and so I think I was able to talk more about heaven with my father, because he was dying and he knew it. And he really mellowed over the years, and God was really preparing him. So we would talk about heaven, and I remember saying, you know, I hope you get into the front line of that great cloud of witnesses and cheer me on. And so he's like, I will, you know. And so we would have those kind of really sweet talks. My mom is a pretty insecure choleric and terrified about not having enough money. And she's not well-to-do at all. And she gets really hysterically frantic about money. And so for me, it has been a great opportunity to talk to my mom about God taking care of her. And every day when we see God provide, you know, she now knows what's coming. Yes, God provides. Yes, God's going to take care of me. And there have been some times where I've had to literally intervene in these just tirades about terror, about money, and say, Mom, if I continue to talk more about you thinking you don't have enough money, I will be disobeying Jesus. Because Jesus says we are not to worry about tomorrow. Jesus says he will take care of you. And so I have to stop this conversation, because I'm not going to disobey my Lord. And she's like, oh, you're right. And so in a sense, I've been walking my mom through how to trust God in these perceived fears. And there have been times when she's been so overcome, I'm like, Mom, we just got to stop right now and pray. And we've prayed. We've prayed, and she'll pray these softer prayers, and afterwards she'll be softer. So for me, even saying let's pray is out of desperation. Maybe I just want to kind of control it and shut down the hysteria, which, you know, God has allowed me to use. But I think for me, I'm preparing Mom for resting in God in the last couple years, maybe, of her life, and getting more comfortable with God. She, you know, her not being such an orphan. She's lived as a Christian orphan for many years. And I think she's starting to come around to God really is taking care of her. Again, I don't do it every Friday, and I could be doing more with her, but I think that's where the Lord has been giving me opportunities to help her live in the present with some peace, which has been really good. So, yeah.
Oh, I have something I want to say before we go to questions. Go ahead. So we're concluding, but I wanted to mention one thing that again, we're telling a lot of stories here, but the reason is the things that we're talking about are time-consuming and often inconvenient. And so the question is, do you respond or how do you respond and what are the consequences of that? And I don't think there's any pat answers to that. You start to get a feel and maybe an increasing conviction about what to do in those situations. So we haven't talked a lot about ministry because it's mainly a discussion of time. And when you have to spend more time with your parents, you have to, and you've got that conviction, then you have to figure out how am I going to do that. Either hang on, just take on more overall responsibility, including ministry, or let some things go. And we've had to do a little bit of both.
I guess we should apply God's heart to parents. I don't know who typed that. Maybe I typed it, but since I don't remember much anymore. But, you know, yeah, God loves our parents, and he's committed to caring for them, and he's going to use us to do it. So honor our parents, yeah. Walk by faith. This is the thing that for me is not by guilt or rules. One of the most helpful things someone said to me, which I said in the very beginning, is God is impossible to satisfy, but he's easy to please. God knows how hard this is for you. He knows how your heart is breaking watching your parents age. He knows the struggle that you feel if you can't make it to CT, or if you're not discipling two people, whatever your own internal guilt is with ministry outside your family, God is easy to please. And there are ways, I believe, that God has allowed Cliff and me to maintain a vital life outside of our parents. And people have been flexible with us. But we don't live by guilt or rules. We just, every day, it's like, all right, Lord, just help us make good decisions. And we don't always know what the best decision is, but we know that God is not guilting us and there are no rules to this. And everybody's situation is different. You got to anticipate sanctification. Oh, my gosh. So, choleric Susie Fanley and choleric Kathy Fanley Tryons. Talk about two women who go head to head. And I think what the Lord has taught me is I cannot make an older choleric infantile do what a younger choleric infantile wants her to do. I just can't. And so I think I've been so grateful that God has given me many chances to take the lower seat, to realize you can't control anybody anyway. I've learned how to de-escalate situations. I mean, that was a skill I didn't have. I just reacted to her fears and her screaming. And I've learned to de-escalate, not take things personally, take a breath, you know, stop and pray. I feel like I've grown in loving my mom and having more compassion and kindness and patience than I ever dreamed I would have. This has been a road to sanctification for me. And I'm still not there, but I want to say this humbly. I've got three sisters who don't live in Columbus, and I just thank God it was me in Columbus, because my sisters aren't trying to walk by the Spirit, and they stay away because it's just too hard. But thank God I've been placed in Columbus, who at least knows I've got to walk with the Lord on this and let him sanctify me. Because Mom and I really do have sweet times. And I have no regrets. When she dies, I will have no regrets of what I've done. And I'm so grateful that God has used this in my life to smooth out some rough edges, you know, of being bossy and being intractable and trying to get my way and stuff like that. I just feel like, you know, this is sanctification. So, do you want your kids to take care of you? Model for them by living in faith with how you're taking care of your parents. So we're going to open this up for comments, questions. Again, what you have is similar, it's different. It's this, it's that. What do you guys want to say? Yeah. PBS documentary called America. Yeah, my nephew, my mom's grandson, is going to buy her a new cell phone. Again, 89-year-old with a cell phone, smartphone. He said, well, that's the least I can do for you taking the brunt of most of it. And I just said, it's not a brunt. It's a privilege. You know, yes, it, some days I'm thinking, how long, oh Lord. But it's a real privilege. And I think as Christians, again, most Americans want to take care of their parents, but they just don't have the bandwidth, resources. They don't have the spirit. And we can really model how to love our parents well. I'm not taking the brunt. I'm the one who's getting the privilege.
How many of you are retired? Okay, how many of you are close to retirement?
How many of you wish you could retire?
Well, the only reason I bring it up is even though our parents are requiring more and more time, retirement is... affords a great opportunity to do that and to do ministry. We both are in, as she mentioned, some of the things we're involved in. If you're at that point where you're in retirement and have, or taking care of elderly parents, you may have one of the most richest times of your spiritual life ever, not just because you're caring for your parents, because you have time to do some other good ministry. Any other questions?
Just about with our parents requiring more time helping them out at their home. And I remember when you were driving up there every Friday. And so one of the things, this is my sister, one of the things we've run into with our parents is being in living situations that require, that they could take care of at one point and they can't now, but they do not want to leave those situations. And so, but we can't be, we don't know how to help that situation and how to encourage them to be able to live in a situation that they are maybe able to take care of, because we also can barely take care of our own stuff, let alone theirs. So I don't know if you have any thoughts on that.
Oh boy. This is one of the hardest issues. And with me, it was really agonizing because my dad just about killed himself trying to be the sole caregiver for my mom. And then after she died, he was all by himself. I can't remember how long, over a year. And he would not leave that house. And I kept imploring him, you know. And we even looked at a few places, but he was not ready to do it. The straw that broke the camel's back was when he wasn't answering the phone from Sunday evening to Monday morning. And then I finally went over there, and he'd been on the floor for 12 hours, couldn't get up. And he had had an infection of a finger. We'd gone to a clinic and gotten antibiotics, but it was out of control. And they had to go to the hospital. They amputated his finger. And but when he was on the floor, oh, this was... classic. He's on the floor, doesn't have a stitch on. He must have been getting ready to go to bed, and he hadn't moved for 12 hours. And I knock on the door. I say, "Dad." And I hear him way in the back going, "Come here." So I go back, and there he is in all his glory. And he says, "I've decided something." I go, "What?" He says, "I'm not going to drive anymore." Well, that was the other thing I've been bugging him about for years. And then I said, and are you ready to go into assisted living now?" He goes, "Yep." So it took that to get him to stop driving. And I was ready to go and demand. I contemplated demanding that he take a driver's test. I think there's some provision in the law to do that for an elderly person. I just couldn't pull the trigger on it. But I found out later he'd had 3 accidents, and they had the insurance company had dropped him, so he got some other insurance on some exorbitant price, and thank God he didn't hurt anybody.
Jeannie, I just don't think, I mean, there are the children who go and kidnap the parents and force them into a home. I'm not taking that with my mom. I will find my mom on the floor, and she's admitted it. You know. I've invited her to live with us, and she's like, "I don't want to." I don't really want her to either. I just don't think it would be good all the way around. But we're going to have to find her on the floor. His parents' house was not clean. They ate Meals on Wheels, which are horrible meals. But they wouldn't pay for anybody to come in and clean, right? Only the kids can. Well, we just couldn't. And so we just had to let things go until he was on the floor. And my mom's going to be somewhat the same thing. We've purged her stuff, and she has someone to come in once a month to clean. But maybe there are more options. But I'm not going to drag my mom into a home.
Council of Aging, and so they've got their aging council, whatever, and you know, they run Meals on Wheels and some of these other things, but they also have like a social worker that'll come out, and it gives you a third party, so you're not the one saying, "Oh, well, how are you going to take care of this? Oh, and how do you handle these?" That it, you know, at least with my dad, it was useful because he's 92, he's living alone, he's been in the hospital twice in the past 2 years. So he's on the bubble. And it wasn't until this last hospitalization that he goes, "Well, maybe at 95 I'll move into a place." You know, so at least it's in his radar. But it was really helpful to say, "Gee, if you want to live at home, let's help support you do that. These are the things that you have to be at home." And then it starts to be self-revelatory to them that it's like, "Oh, well, if somebody has to do my laundry every week, I guess I, you know," and that costs. So you eventually get to where that cost-benefit ratio.
Yeah.
I think it's
yeah.
really useful.
Sounds great.
And yeah, you just dissed Meals on Wheels. But I'll tell you, it's somebody that knocks on your parents' door and makes sure they're alive every
yeah.
day. You know, so
yeah.
it's useful yeah. that it just gets my dad dressed and out of bed.
Yeah. That's true. Yeah, I just was dissing the actual nutritional content, not the fact that someone. Does anyone here struggle with the balance of ministry and parents? Are you feeling guilty? Are you feeling like there are expectations on you that you're trying to navigate? Anybody want to talk about that?
I have a situation where I, too, am the only person in town. And I have my parents. I'm very blessed. They're 85 and 86. They did 5 years ago move into a condo that's bigger than the house I grew up in, but most everything's on the main floor. And my mom had a heart attack in another hospital stay earlier this year, so I have worked there in Delaware County. Meals are better. Source Point is a great place. I have worked with them. I've had the social worker in because I was cleaning, I was cooking, I was doing everything. My mom didn't like what I cooked because I cook very healthy and she likes comfort food. But my problem is that, and I'm very blessed, and they're both believers, and my siblings, I have a brother and a sister who both live out of state. My problem is that I really struggle with, I'm the one that's here, I'm the one handling everything. My dad handles his finances, but I help him with them. And yet I'm constantly getting the pressure from my siblings who love their parents. "Well, have you done this? Have you done that?" And I'm constantly the bad guy. And so I really get torn. And there are times where I feel like I'm really doing a ministry to them. My husband has been awesome. I quit a job 4 years ago, and I've consulted a little bit, not worked it since then. I'm not really retired. I'd actually like to work because it gives me an opportunity for outreach. So I struggle with that, but I feel like between them, and then I have my husband's mother-in-law, who's younger, healthier, but has no family, has no one, never had children, and nobody else takes care of her. So I'm handling all her computer stuff and that kind of thing. So I feel that constant pressure, like I'm always letting someone down. So, you know, that's been a hard thing for me.
Well, I was going to say we've both felt the tension of dealing with siblings who aren't there, but who have lots of thoughts about how things ought to be done. And this is a big sanctification area for me because I had a real problem with my older brother. I always had the younger brother syndrome, you know, and so.
I'm the youngest.
Yeah, so it's like I think the Lord had to break me of that, but I just think that having if you're focusing on what God wants you to do and you're serving God, then I think that's the key thing that prevents you from getting caught in that horizontal thing. And and I think over time, my brother really began to see and hear from my dad what contribution I was making. And he actually came around, I think, to really appreciating. You know, it's the fact that I'm here with my dad that in some ways frees him up to be on the West Coast where he's in Seattle.
You stand before Christ, and yeah, you gotta. I had a sister who suggested I do something today, and she's not my closest sister. And I just felt that anger, you know. I was so offended, and I just said, "Jesus, here's another chance for me to say, yep, great suggestion," and I'm just gonna, you know, I'm gonna use it as sanctification.
Oh, go ahead.
Is it okay if I change the subject? Okay. So I can obviously relate to so much of what you're talking about. The only adult child in town, blah, 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 and my siblings out of town. But I think one of the things that I struggle with the most is I'm trying to be a good daughter, and I'm trying to be a good caretaker. I'm also in the medical profession. And so I realized about 6 months ago that I was just feeling so burdened and so overwhelmed with, my mother has numerous medical problems, but she lives alone. And I feel like it's my responsibility to keep her alive. And it was like, oh my God, that's ridiculous. You know, it's not my job. It's not my job to keep her alive. But, you know, that's one of the things I struggle with. I take her out to eat and she wants to get French fries and she wants to get, you know, fried this and that and the other. And so Dave's always like, don't argue with your mom. Don't fight with her. But it's like, you know, it's so that balance between trying to be a daughter, trying to be a caregiver, trying to, you know, help her, you know, to make good choices, but the choices are hers. So, you know, it's that fine line you have to walk of letting them make their decisions, even if they're the wrong ones. It's just hard.
I don't know if this should be on tape, but Cliff and I were talking about that because my mom is forgetting to drink water, and her kidneys are starting to fail. Well, do I push her to drink water, or do I let nature take its course? I'm letting nature take its course. I'm not going to be her water police.
Well, on the food thing, you ought to see my dad eat, man. He sausage, you know, he eats like a horse. He's 96 years old, and he loves it. And so he's dragging me to all these meals now, and I'm starting to eat all that stuff. So, but I mean, it's a good point, but that's another decision that I think you got to work out with the Lord, you know. But we're okay with letting them eat.
My sisters want mom to stop driving. And I said, well, are you willing to come to Columbus and be her taxi? No. Well, then she's going to keep driving. Because I can't, I've offered Uber, and she doesn't want to get in a car with a stranger, which I can, you know, I can understand, but I'd love to teach her Uber. But, you know, I can't drive her around a lot. I am driving her more, but I can't.
But I think that driving thing is a real hard one. I mean, I was really torn about that because I was afraid my dad was going to hurt somebody. And again, I don't know if I should have required him to take a driving test or not, but I didn't. And then as it turned out, everything worked out okay. But case by case.
So my mom's been in assisted living for about a year. My dad passed like 7 years ago, and it just came to me. You know, I go up and visit her at regular intervals. I've set my boundaries pretty clear. So, but the thing I recognized is while it's easier and more convenient for me to visit her at the assisted living place, there's so much pleasure she derives when I take her in the car and drive her somewhere. When I take her out on a trip and she gets to drive through the country. It's been amazing, just the pleasure that that gives. So as far as sacrifice goes, maybe you take them to an apple orchard and they can't get out because my mom can't walk really, but she got to drive through the country. And the thing she says, it's like, yeah, you spend your whole life in this apartment and you go up to eat in the dining room and then you come back to your apartment. And that's your life. So I would recommend if you can get your parents out to some place maybe they used to go to, that they used to love. It's been super sweet. The other thing that I do with my mom is we've been reading The Hiding Place out loud to each other, which has that thread of spirituality through it. And it's just a super way to start a spiritual conversation that's already in the book. So that's another thing I'd recommend because she loves it. She'll say, can we read tonight? I'm like, sure. So just a couple things to help them get out of their world has become a lot smaller, especially when they move into assisted living. So if we can help widen it just a little.
So I was in Eastern Europe last week and there was an email from IFI. We need someone to teach these Chinese girls how to make apple pie. So my husband got my mom, who has a major in home ec, has been a quantity cooking teacher in her earlier years. He got my 89-year-old mom into the IFI kitchen, teaching these women, these young Chinese women, how to make pies. And she goes, what's next? And you're right. And I want to find ways for my mom to serve. So now she wants to host the Thanksgiving dinner.
So my dad, I had him over to watch a movie and dinner, and then afterwards we went out and smoked a cigar. He hadn't had a cigar in like years. And later on he told me, I had a really good time, he says, especially that cigar. So tomorrow, Saturday night, if the Yankees make it that far, we're going to go to a cigar place in Westerville. It's a big old house. They got these padded chairs and TVs. We're gonna light up a couple of stogies and drink some beer. He's 96. You know, if he were to die smoking that cigar, he'd be a happy man.